So one last short topic. Tina's back.
Hello. You can see that obviously on completing some projects, which is IFRS 10, 11 and 12, I've now been moved on to leases as my punishment, possibly, for what I've done here. But before my leases life, I obviously spent you know, a number of years working on the sort of consolidation and joint arrangements package, which which we're obviously talking about now. I think that there have been what we've called the package of sort of, you know, the standards to come out of the consolidation and joint arrangements projects, the sort of IFRS 10, 11 and 12. You know, we completed and published final standards back in May last year, 2011. But obviously what follows that are different endorsement processes that go on around the world. And at the moment, Europe is going through its endorsement process of these standards. And I think there was some publicity in the media, a few newspaper articles on this. And I think one or two of you actually thought it would be useful if we just gave you a quick update at this meeting of sort of what is the status of that endorsement process and what are the sort of the different pieces of information that are playing into that. And so in agenda paper 8, we just briefly summarised where we are. As I say, those standards, IFRS 10 is the standard of consolidation, which essentially tries to, you know, bring together and have one sort of consolidation model that applies to all entities, you know, SPs or structured entities as well as the rest. IFRS 11, of course, sort of replaces IAS 31, it's joint arrangements. And essentially the biggest sort of change that comes through from IFRS 11 is to try and remove that optional accounting policy to go for sort of equity method or proportionate consolidation. And then we've got IFRS 12, which is that package, that disclosure standard that provides sort of, you know, enhanced, very significantly enhanced, I suppose, and expanded disclosure requirements across the board for any interest that you have in associates, joint ventures, also consolidated, and in particular, unconsolidated SPs or structured entities. And at the moment, as we say, EFRAG are going through their process in terms of providing endorsement advice to the European Commission. Earlier this month, they have actually published their draft endorsement advice. And what they've reached, by the way, and I should say as well that this, the ISB put this out as a package of standards that kind of naturally link together, those that talk about control, that talk about joint control and the disclosures that go with it. And also EFRAG are considering these standards as a package in terms of endorsement. So when they've gone through their process, they have actually assessed them from a technical point of view. And the draft endorsement advice from EFRAG is that from a technical standpoint, these standards, you know, make sense and they believe they will improve financial reporting in that respect. But there's a question over the exact timing of when these standards would become, you know, mandatorily have to be applied by European entities. And I think as you see in the paper that what the draft advice at the moment is that the standards would get endorsed, but only endorsed with a mandatory effective date of 1 year later than what the board's proposing. So EFRAG is suggesting in their draft endorsement that it wouldn't be until 1 January 2014, whereas the effective date of the board included in the standard was 2013. And I think we've given some reasons. The board, there was a letter submitted and the board did consider it at their January board meeting, but decided for various reasons to retain the original effective date of 2013. And maybe just to draw out probably I think the most important factor there is I suppose that from the board's perspective we hope and we think this package of standards should improve financial reporting to a large extent and hopefully in particular around the disclosure area and particularly around those unconsolidated sort of SP structures where today in fact there are no disclosure requirements whatsoever under IFRS. Whereas what we're now proposing in IFRS 12, first of all, provides much more consistency with what is already required under US GAAP for variable interest entities. In fact, IFRS 12 goes slightly further as well. So that was probably the main reason.
Just So this is not the new political battleground in Europe?
We hope not. So maybe with that, I'll just, that's sort of an update on where things are. I don't know if you have any particular questions.
Could you explain to me 6B? I don't understand.
Yeah, I'll what's happening, okay.
Who's complaining, why they're complaining, is what I'm trying to figure out.
Well, there have been some, I suppose, some concerns raised about the timing by some European preparers. You know, that's the basis, because obviously EFRAG's constituency, you know, is Europe. And some of the larger preparers in Europe that are most affected by particularly IFRS 10 and IFRS 12 are concerned about, you know, the timing of implementation and the time needed to get there. And also they have some concerns that there is, I mean, you talked earlier today about, you know, the investment entity ED and the effect that might have. And there are some of those who are concerned saying, well, you know, under IFRS 10, you know, I may have, there may be entities that I'm having to go off and consolidate and perhaps depending where the investment entity goes, etc.
So the reason I single that one out is when this project first came forward, the ISB in particular said that investment entities in Europe was a non-issue. And that was, in fact, one of the reasons not to take on the project. So the first problem I have is the first thing I have is, you know, why is he frank? Even, you know, we were told it wasn't an issue, so that's sort of what's bothering me with this one. And I guess the second, are they suggesting that they don't know whether because for the Europeans it would be they're actually going to have to report it at fair value instead of consolidation. That's the switch they're looking at. And is that really that much of an issue? Since all of the preparers elsewhere have said that there's a huge switch to go from fair value to consolidation, and if you are an investment entity, there's a presumption that you have to be doing fair value, or you wouldn't be an investment entity. So I signaled this one out as being disingenuous. This, unless somebody can explain something to me that I missed, this is a smoke. This 6B is a smokescreen.
I think, to be fair, that, I mean, part of what, by the way, all of what you said is right and correct. You've got the right analysis, but I'll just explain one aspect of thinking where some of the concerns are. Is that, and that's, by the way, that factored into the board's thinking in January as well. That what the investment entity should do on the face of it is just allow people to use fair value where they've already had the fair value information and where potentially they're having to consolidate where it's of no informational value and they're not doing it in their own reporting. I think some of the concern comes from the fact that if you had, and I'm sure you talked about this, I'm not sure about you know, should there be a roll-up and a continuation of fair value accounting at the parent level if there is a parent of an investment entity. And some of the concern that's been raised is that some of the large financial services, some of the large banks or large insurers potentially under IFRS 10 will now have to consolidate some investment entity, some funds that they didn't previously consolidate. And they would then say that, you know, and so IFRS 10 is potentially making them consolidate some of these funds for the first time, and they're saying that if the ISB in its re-deliberations were to decide that the fair value accounting in the fund were allowed to be, you know, rolled up to that, you know, insurer bank parent, then there's a potential that they might have to go through the process of, you know, working out the consolidation of some of those, you know, portfolio companies of the fund that ultimately they may not have to if the ISB decided.
But if this is a European example, they are already consolidating all of those, are they not?
Arguably they should, but practice is currently divergent, and that's one of the advantages of IFRS 10, that we will end up in a situation where those funds which really are controlled will be consolidated, whereas at the moment it's, say, practice varies.
So what you're saying is that IFRS 10 is going to sweep in into consolidation things that weren't there, and that some of those might turn out to be investment entities, and therefore they have a question about,
yes.
Okay, all right.
Yes.
That's a subset of subset, but fair enough.
Yeah.
But you solve the issue to an extent by having fair value surviving consolidation.
Yes.
The issue here, incidentally, is the Canadian concern here is that because they were allowed to do it in Canada, what happened was IFRS came in, and it was by that point clear that there might be something here. So what's happened in Canada is these guys have been carved out, and that's a very uncomfortable situation to carve out anybody. And so
when you say these guys, who
investment entities in Canada had an exemption, well, not an exemption, because I don't like the term. They consolidated under a different basis because of their different business model. They were, because it was viewed as cruel and unfair to force them to consolidate potentially for 1 or 2 years and create and buy the consolidation software. They've been grandfathered out temporarily, and so that constituent just wants it. You know, please solve it quickly as you can. And that group desperately doesn't want things to drag on, because they're in this never land of being neither in IFRS or in any other gap, waiting for your decision.
And it sounds like an extremely small group that would be having discomfort from implementation per 1st of January 2012. Can you not just exempt those? Is that too complex?
Yes,
it is. And we have decided we will not make an exemption. If they don't know what they control, they have a problem. We have decided already.
Yeah, and I suppose, you know, the purpose of this was, I think you were interested in an update, and I suppose as well, for us, and as well as, you know, possibly feeding back to EFAG, it was maybe interesting as part of their process that from your views as from the user community, do you have any, you know, thoughts or concerns or anything else about, you know, when these new requirements and maybe particularly the disclosure requirements should actually be made, you know, mandatorily?
And I would be very surprised if we allow a roll-up of this fair value. If you have sort of an industrial company and they have some sort of investment subsidiary, we will, at least I would be very much in favor of that you have a normal consolidation upwards, and I think there is a strong majority of the board presently for that, which is our proposal also. I would be very surprised if that changes.
One thing that's a bit puzzling is I would be gung-ho to write to FRAG saying, you know, that the benefits of getting on with this far outweigh the disadvantages, if I hadn't heard earlier today that we normally allow companies 2 years from, you know, passing the standards to implementation so that you can get all your ducks in a row for the prior periods?
It's 12 to 18 months between publication and effective date.
Yeah.
And this was more than 18 months, and it was a staff draft for however many months before that.
And disclosure is not, at least for disclosure, it's not as if they're changing, it's not as if they're changing the whole systems around, and it's not as if they had a good idea what was coming down the pipe, too. So it's not as if it just...
Yeah.
The other point, I think, with the investment entities, again, I mean, assuming you get that out before 2013, one would guess that you would allow early adoption.
Absolutely.
So somebody can say, well, IFRS 10 applies, but I can early adopt IFRS, whatever this one's going to be, 15 or whatever it might be. So problem solved. So they're not going to have to go in and then go out again.
Right.
Yeah.
They can go straight to the answer they want. I mean, it's subject to the roll-up point, obviously, which may be a slight complication.
Subject to roll-up and when they would have that certainty. But if you're not going to roll it up, then I suppose...
Okay, well, the purpose of the exercise, as Petrina said, was to update you and keep you informed.
So what are the implications? If the EU doesn't endorse, then they won't be in compliance with IFRS, and so they... Well, they're still doing IFRS as adopted by us, just that they haven't adopted this bit yet.
Well, they won't. Aren't they talking about endorsing with a delayed effective date?
Yeah.
So endorsement means those that would want to could adopt early, or on time, I should say.
Yeah.
Right?
On time. Better description.
And so could, but maybe wouldn't necessarily. Obviously, if they don't adopt, then we don't get the added disclosure that I think this is most going to bring.
That's right.
Deferral of disclosure.
Yeah, so they
could. Well, it's not
going to
end, I mean.
No, I mean, most banks have already done all the analysis, all the work, and even if, and they want to go 2013, that's the message.
Have we had some supporters, right?
Yes, we had, both sides. I mean, clearly there were some with concerns, but we also had communication from some large preparers who are going through the process to say, we've got teams in place, we've got all the work, we're ready for 2013. And in fact, from their point of view, they're saying we want it to be mandatorily effective that date because we want a level playing field in terms of what everybody's doing. It's fine, yeah, we could early adopt, but then it's almost like we would be being penalised in that case for being ready because the others wouldn't be in the same place.
They wouldn't be penalised, they get brownie points. And the ones who have to take the extra year will get demerits.
Yeah, they even took the trouble of writing letters to us and said, don't do this to us. Don't delay this.
Yeah.
I think we had more supporters than people asking for delay.
Okay, I think we'll call this one to a close. Should we end the public session? Patricia, are you there? No, I asked earlier and I didn't think she was.
You can summarize it.
She emailed me and said she was.